We've been talking about some habits that the Holy Spirit teaches us that help us to be what we've said we want to be. Steadfast, firm, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. There's some habits that the Spirit teaches that help us to accomplish that. And it's kind of, in my mind, related to what the Apostle Peter said in 1 Peter 3 and verse 11. He said, what manner of persons ought you to be in all holy living and godliness? If you think about it, this world's coming to an end. What kind of people should you be? What kind of person do I want to be before God? And so this morning we're going to talk about a way for us to overcome short-term thinking. And we're going to talk about the answer to that as being patient. Now in Ephesians, the 4th chapter, at verse 2, the apostle says, be completely humble and gentle. Be patient. This is something that we want to have in our lives. Bearing with one another in love. And we're going to be talking about that a lot for the next couple of weeks as we continue our discussion of the book of Romans. We're up to the 14th chapter. We'll be beginning this week. Ted's teaching on Wednesday night, and then next week I'll be teaching. But we're going to be doing a lot of talking about relationships that we have with other people based on our relationship that we have with God. But let's talk about short-term thinking for just a minute. I'm convinced that for the most part, we understand that short-term thinking has to be avoided. Yeah, well, think about that for a minute. You know, short-term thinking is what causes a 5-year-old to get his allowance and go spend all of it immediately on candy, not thinking about the fact that he's trying to save up for a bicycle. That's short-term thinking. And we see it in a lot of different ways. You see it with Sarah and Abraham and Hagar. And there's some things that are a little surprising about what we're going to read this morning. This is the Genesis, the 16th chapter, beginning at verse 1. It's a long reading. We're going to read all the way down to verse 16. But I want you to notice several incidents of short-term thinking as you go through this reading. Abram has been given a great promise by God back in Genesis 12, beginning of verse 1 and all the way down through verse 3. 3 parts of the promise. I'll make you a great nation. I'm going to give you a land. And in you, all families of the earth will be blessed. Abram and Sarah didn't have any kids. They were getting old. And it didn't appear that they were going to have any kids. So watch what happens with some short-term thinking in spite of this great promise that God gave Abram back in Genesis 12. Genesis 16, beginning verse 1. Now Sarah, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong because her name was later changed to Sarah. At this point, it's Sarai, I think. Abram's wife, and I'll probably mispronounce Abraham, or Abram, because I'll call him Abraham without thinking. His name is changed a little bit later, but at this point, he's still known as Abram. Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. But she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar, so she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through birth. Abram agreed to what Sarah said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian slave, Hagar, and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar. She conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to displease her mistress. I hadn't thought about that, but that was going to happen. Sarah said, Abram, you're responsible for what I am suffering, for the wrong I am suffering. I put my slave in your arms. Now that she knows she's pregnant, she despises me. You're responsible for this. May the Lord judge between you and me. Abram responded, your slave is in your hands, Abram said. Do with her whatever you think best. Again, short-term thinking. Then Sarah mistreated Hagar. So she fled from him. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that's beside the road to Shur. He said to Hagar, Hagar, slave of Sarah, where have you come from and where are you going? Sarah said, I'm running away from my mistress, Sarah. The angel of the Lord corrected her short-term thinking at that point. And he said, go back to your mistress and submit to her. The angel added, here's the long-term thinking that had not characterized Hagar. The angel said, and this is, of course, the word from God, I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count. The angel of the Lord also said to her, you're now pregnant, you will give birth to a son, you will name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard your misery. He'll be a wild donkey of a man, his hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he'll live in hostility toward all his brothers. So she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. I don't know what that name would have been, but some name that meant that. She said, I have now seen the one who sees me. This is why the well was called Beer Lahai Roy. It's still there between Kadesh and Bered. So Hagar bore Abram's son, and Abram gave the name Ishmael to the son she had. Now, what was the problem in this reading? Abram had short-term thinking. Sarai had short-term thinking. Hagar had short-term thinking. If they continued in that short-term thinking, what would have happened to Ishmael? He'd have died. Hagar couldn't take care of him. If they continue in that short-term thinking, what would have happened to the promise that God made to Abraham? Wasn't going to happen. They substituted two things that they should not have substituted. First, they changed the goal. Well, that goal that we had is not going to work out. So we'll create a new goal. Right? And the means that we originally thought were going to work to achieve that goal, we're going to have to get rid of those means because they're not working yet. Shouldn't have substituted. That's what short-term thinking does. It leads us to make substitutions when we shouldn't make substitutions. Then there are other people who fall prey to short-term thinking. What about the rash promisers that come to Jesus and they say, I want to follow you. I'll go wherever you go. Jesus dealt with those kind of people in Luke the 14th chapter, beginning at verse 25. Again, it's fairly long reading, but it makes the point. clearly, Lawrence Brown, traveling with Jesus, he turned and he spoke to them. He said, anyone who comes to me must hate his father and mother. He must hate his wife and his children. He must hate his brothers and his sisters. He must even hate his own life. Unless he does, he can't be my disciple. Anyone who doesn't carry his cross and follow me can't be my disciple. Suppose someone wants to build a tower. Won't he sit down first and figure out how much it will cost? Then he'll see whether he has enough money to finish it. Suppose he starts building and he's not able to finish. Then everyone who sees what he's done will laugh at it. They'll say, this fellow started to build, but he wasn't able to finish. Oh, short-term thinking. Suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Suppose he has 10,000 men while the other king has 20,000 coming against him. Won't he first sit down and think about whether he can win? Suppose he decides he can't win. When? Then he'll send some men to ask how peace can be made. He'll do this while the other king is still far away. In the same way, you must give up everything you have. If you don't, can't be my disciple. It's not a short-term goal. It's not a short-term thing. We have initial zeal, and that's enough to get us started. In fact, our initial zeal may cause us to make promises that we can't keep. To make promises to God that we know are beyond us. Then we have no ability to maintain. And we fall apart. That's just short-term thinking. That's all it is. What about zealous Christians? Passage we read from 1 Corinthians 15:57. Let us be always excelling in the work of the Lord. We start out, we make great progress, but we can't finish. We can't see it through to the end. Galatians 6:9-10. Let us not become weary in well doing. For the proper time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those who belong to the family of believers. What's the problem here? Harvest doesn't come as quickly as we think it ought to. We've been talking to our friends. We've been telling them about Jesus, and they're not responding. Harvest is delayed. So we substitute. We substitute a different doctrine. Maybe that's what it takes to get them to respond. Substitution, just like Hagar and Sarai and Abraham made. We substitute works because the work that we're doing doesn't seem like it's bearing fruit. And so we decide we're gonna have to do something else. I've been reading recently about churches that have given up preaching about Christ because they're concerned that what people need is an escape from the difficulties of this life. So they talk about loneliness, and the church is an antidote to loneliness. And they don't talk about Jesus. Poor substitution. The Spirit teaches us that practicing patience is what overcomes short-term thinking. Look at James 5. We're going to begin in verse 7. Be patient then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. Be patient. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble one against another, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. Brothers and sisters, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we count as blessed those who have persevered. You've heard of Job's perseverance. You've seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. And there are a couple of things here that we need to notice. Patience doesn't mean that you sit on your hands and wait. Farmers don't sit on their hands and wait. When they plant a crop, they constantly tend the crop, patiently doing so. Patience doesn't mean sitting on your hands. And it doesn't mean grumbling one against another, because we haven't seen the harvest. You're not patient. That's not the answer. That's back to short-term thinking. Job persevered. Job didn't sit on his hands and moan. Job had a conversation with God. He was patient. Let's look at one more passage. 1 Corinthians 13. We're going to begin with verse 4. Again, trying to understand patience. In this instance, patience is a part of love. This is a passage that is read so frequently at weddings because it describes the relationship that you have when you're patient, and a loving relationship demands that we be actively engaged. Look at the way he said it. Love is patient. Love is also kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It's not proud. It does not dishonor others. It's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrong. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. And then look at how patient love acts. It's not sitting on its hands. Love always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. It always perseveres. Love never fails. Love that doesn't do anything fails. That's short term. That's starting but not finishing. Love never fails. And then he points out that this is a passage that's about preaching love. It's not actually about love. Where there are prophecies, they'll cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stifled. Where there's knowledge, it will pass away. But love never fails. Patient people never sit on their hands. It just doesn't work that way. Patience overcomes short-term thinking. The problem with short-term thinking is we substitute. We substitute doctrine. We substitute works. We substitute a false God for the real God because we're focused on the short-term. I don't think you want to be that way. I can't imagine anybody who's seen the long term would then be satisfied with the short term. That would be like Abraham, after his son Isaac has been born, saying, no, I like the substitution we made before. I think I'll go back to Israel. It doesn't make any sense. Yes, we want you to be a Christian. We want you to put on Jesus. We want you to be one of his people. And the only way you can do that is to be baptized with Jesus. Put yourself to death. That's what Jesus said. You have to hate your own life to say to God, put this man to death and raise me a new creature that's prepared for the long term. We'll help you do that. Unlike what happened at Auburn when someone wanted to be baptized and they had to walk a mile and a half to get to a lake where they could find some water to do it, we have water right here. We can baptize you this morning. It may be that you've had a hard time staying a hold of the long term. And I know it's hard. Hard for me. I sometimes forget. I'm saving my money to buy the bicycle, and then I see the candy, and I really want the candy. Because I want that return. I want that reward that comes now. I have a hard time staying with it. Come back to God. Don't substitute. Come back to God. It's the only way you're going to get